from an Airstream somewhere in Tornado Alley, bringing you the people, places, and stories from the Panhandle to the Red River. This is your Only in Oklahoma show.
And welcome to the show. You know, before the pandemic, some time ago, when you could actually go to a restaurant and not have to be seated 6 feet apart from each other, hardly had the chance to go to White Dog Hill in Clinton, Oklahoma. And today we have the chance to talk to the owner and proprietor, Nelson King. And he's going to tell us all about it and maybe a ghost story. I'm Brett.
And I am Harley.
So, Harley, question.
Yes.
It's summer.
It is.
Things are kind of getting back to normal, which means, you know, you get to have the... let's just skip that part. Question. Let's get right to it. Snow cone or ice cream?
Ice cream.
See, I'm not a huge fan of ice cream. I can go to a Brahms and watch everyone that's with me eat ice cream and not feel left out. Give me a snow cone. Problem with snow cones, they're seasonal. Unless you have one of those places that has them year round, which they're out there, but you really got to dig for it. But I like that walk up, tough shed, you know, kind of set up gravel parking lot.
What? Snoopy snow cone machine?
I did.
Does your arm still hurt from grinding those ice cubes?
Yes. And, you know, I don't even think that the snow cone was probably the size of a shot glass.
I don't think that I ever got a snow cone out of it. I think that I just gave up and then just drank the juice.
Well, I think the ice melted before it could actually be used in a snow cone. Because, I mean, you put an ice cube in, you turn the little shaver, and you put their little... Snoopy flavoring, which I think they only had one flavor. I think it was cherry.
I don't think it was cherry. I think it was red.
Red flavor. Whatever red flavor is. I think most people associate red with cherry, but you're probably right. It wasn't. But we've been invited to have snow cones in Okarchee.
Yes, we have. The proprietor of Tiki Hut in Okarchee, mm-hmm. Oklahoma, said that we should come down and try out their snow cones.
But here's the problem with that.
We have a few problems.
I am turning over a new leaf, which I've turned over so many of them that I could probably make a carb-free salad out of it. I'm kind of trying to be healthier. You go to Okarchee, the only thing I can think of besides now, Tiki Hut, is Ishans. Everything is fried. I cannot peel the breading off the okra or the chicken because the chicken is 120 degrees.
Dude, the chicken is not 100. That chicken is like 550 degrees. I don't know how... Without a beer to start you off,
yes.
I don't know how anybody ever actually eats that stuff.
You actually have to dip the chicken in the beer.
And you hear that. Yeah.
It's so good. But I don't know that I could go to Okarchee, not have chicken. And furthermore, do they have low-calorie options for snow cones? I know ice. There's no carbs in ice.
Can I have a plain snow cone, please?
And I think they'd probably just make a snowball and throw it at me.
They might have some like sugar-free thing, but I don't do sugar-free.
That's boring, man, because then they have all these additions that you can sometimes get. Gummy worms and gummy bears and nerds and sour straws and all the fun stuff. I just feel like it's... I just have to give up everything.
We'll just have a cheat day sometime soon and go to Okarchee and get some chicken.
Well, it has to be within it's got to be outside of 8 days because we're doing this. It's called a 8-day jump start, kick start. So I've only had like 14 carbs today. Not bad.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I mean,
I mean,
the trick about podcasts is you really don't know what time we're recording this.
No, you have no idea.
And it's 5 a.m. You've already had 14 carbs and you have 3 full meals ahead of you.
Right.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. How easy could it be to cheat? Very. I've eaten 2 bags of pork rinds today.
Well, I promise you, you're going to need a cheat day when you get around to going to White Dog Hill.
Well, I mean, if you don't, I don't know, you're pushing me, man. You're really pushing me to the edge.
Okay, you could, I think, in theory, you could eat there low carb. They've got the cheese platter that...
Cheese, no carbs and cheese.
No carbs and cheese, but it has a bunch of fruit on it,
right.
So you'd have to ignore all of that. God. And then you could get a steak, which is 100% low carb. I think technically you could pull it off, but I wouldn't recommend it.
I think you have to wait until you've reached full, what is it, level 100 ketosis and you're out of the woods completely before you can even do it. Well, the problem is, I want a steak, but I also want a potato.
Let's ask Nelson.
Okay. At White Dog Hill.
Coming up right after this.
So I got an email today. You know, before I started working for the man and actually paying taxes and not, I did a little Postmates, worked for DoorDash.
Yep.
Well, I got a text from Postmates saying, almost time to file taxes, but I don't think I filed. I don't think I have to file. I don't think I made enough. Don't you have to make a certain amount of money to file?
Overall, you have to make a certain amount of money. I think you probably need to file.
I will tell you this. I'm terrible at being an independent contractor.
Well, I do know some people that might be able to assist with that. Holiday Tax Group. They're family and locally owned and operated since 2010. They do have discounts available, but you don't qualify for them.
No, I don't.
Military and teachers get 25% or 20% off. They've got a free 30-minute consultation. Definitely think that you need to take them up on that. So I would say give Holiday Tax Group a call at 405-730-3100.
That's Holiday with two L's. Well, today we are pleased to speak with Nelson King, the mind behind White Dog Hill in Clinton, Oklahoma. Nelson, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
See how easy that was? I thought it was going to be harder than that.
But your lead-in?
Yeah, my lead-in.
I thought it was flawless.
Okay, cool. By the way, I'm not going to delete any of this, because anytime the interview E has something nice to say about me, I have to have evidence. So we're keeping that part in. So, Nelson.
Good. Yes, sir.
So, White Dog Hill, it's on old 66 between Clinton and Weatherford. There's a story here. How did you come to White Dog Hill?
Okay, I was actually born in Oklahoma, but never really lived here. And about 20 years ago, I've been living in South Florida, working for a French company, traveling internationally a lot, and just got to a point where it was all of us getting older, what little family there was, it was time to get a little closer to home. Especially if you've ever lived or been in Miami, you realize you don't actually live in the United States.
Right.
So it was nice to move back to the States. And I had family in Oklahoma and a sister and brother-in-law in Hydra, which is a small town east of me. So I just, actually, it was a sort of like I'd come through to visit for a few days and was driving up to see an aunt at a retirement home in Enid. And more or less, it was like a voice from the glove compartment that said, I need to live here. Mm-hmm. So I'm having a discussion as I'm driving toward Enid with the glove compartment. And they said, where live? Well, at my brother-in-law's grandma's old house in the country. When do I need to move? Well, next spring. And it was this whole long sort of conversation. So I turned around and came back to see if I could find where the house was. And, okay, could see it from an overpass. That's it. And then turned around, drove to Enid, spent a day or two with my aunt. Got back, asked my brother-in-law who lived in the house. He said, there's some students from Southwest Oklahoma State living there. And I said, could you possibly evict them next spring? And he went, yeah, I guess I could. Great, because I plan to move in by May.
Wow.
And so I moved up here with no idea of what I was going to do. And within a few months, just driving back and forth to see some friends in Cheyenne and things, I saw this neat old building up on a hill, obviously abandoned. And it just seemed right. Mm-hmm. So I found the owner, and he said, no, he's more than happy to sell. Took a while to even figure out it was the original Clinton Country Club that it built in 25, had a 9-hole sand green golf course and all of this. And so I got it. And then just shortly after that, I found a little farm thing also out on the edge of Clinton. And so I got this little farm. Thought this is great because I can work on the farm, because the country club had been abandoned for years and then really aggressively, viciously abused with vandals and things. Mm. You know, I'd have people come up later in drunken in tears, customers just going, oh, I'm so sorry. I am just so sorry. And going, I have no idea in the world what you're talking about.
Right.
I used to come up here with my shotgun just to shoot out stuff. And now you got it fixed up nice. And I'm just so sorry. Okay. Well, that, you know, I hope you feel better. And we've got over that now. So while I'm working on that little farm, it was a chance to figure out what in the world I do. Also, having always spent my life in cities, mm-hmm. I've never dealt with a lot of the practical things like septic tanks and wells, and realized that's going to be very involved and very expensive. So it was. It gave me about a year and a half from the end of 2000, and I thought, you know, one, I can see, I have some idea, rough idea of the expenses I'm looking at, and then two, it was built as a commercial building. Mm-hmm. It was built for these guys, and it really was the guys. Women were kind of, they sort of tagged along, but it was the guys' man cave thing.
Right.
But they built it as a commercial place. They had a kitchen in it, but I imagine it was more potluck and stuff in the 20s and 30s. And it had been a country club until the, as close as I can tell, the late 50s. Because obviously by 2000, there's almost no one left around who has any active recollection of it. Mm. So I thought, it does need to go commercial, which opened up a whole other avenue of what you're doing with wells and septic tanks if you use it commercially. So I created a, moved into a very intimate relationship with DEQ, which is not always the happiest thing. Mm-hmm. And so after I got the farm kind of fixed up, I moved up there. I sold the farm, moved up on the hilltop into an old trailer because I couldn't control vandalism either.
Wow.
And I mean, no matter what I did, if I put bars on the windows, if I put up gates, if I whatever, they get kicked out, torn out, driven through, whatever, because the vandals have 20-year reign over me.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually worked. I moved up there right before Christmas that year, and it was so depressing after the little farm into this really junk trailer that I thought, gotta fix it up. It's December, so I put up Christmas lights after the first couple weeks when I actually had power and then some heat. You know, that's all it took. And I thought, I should have put up Christmas lights years ago. Because now there's a car here, there's a person here, and with Christmas lights, someone is home, so you better watch coming up here with your gun.
So, Nelson, you know, let me back you up just a little bit. You know, we talk to a lot of people that have started successful businesses from scratch here in Oklahoma mm-hmm. that literally have almost the same story. They may have had a relative here, but they were just passing through. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people have the same story. There's something about, and I'm not trying to get too, there's a charm about Oklahoma that just says,
about it.
Yeah, there's something, unless
you
have shotgun.
It's in the name, really. You got right. Oklahoma.
Yeah, exactly. Unless wielding a shotgun and shooting out windows, you love it here.
Yeah, there is a reason. You are definitely coming back to something.
Yes.
For us also, being city kids, I have two older sisters, and being city kids, my parents were both from up at Buffalo, up in mm-hmm. Harper County, just before you enter the panhandle. And so every summer from the time we were, you know, housebroke, we would kind of get shipped off for some period of time in the summer. So we're coming from the city, and even then, before they had gotten so rough and you had so many taboos of the kids shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that, I felt like I'm sort of the last generation of having traditional, like, Halloweens where you don't have to worry about X-lax or razor blades in the apples and this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we go to Buffalo in the summer, and you've got a bunch of relatives. Then you've got a bunch of people you don't know until you're a teenager that they're not actually relatives because you've always called them aunt or uncle or something. And there was such a safety to it. But it was a sense of going home. It was also a tremendous freedom because there's no grandma that actually has jurisdiction over you. And then you can shop around so that it's like... because this grandma says, honey, if you're going to eat with us, be here by 5 because we're having liver and onions.
Oh.
And go, I know there's an aunt that's only 2 blocks away that's barbecuing burgers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can go crash in on them, and you're small, so it's not a big extra burger they have to supply.
Right.
But it avoids liver and onions. So there was, I think that was a lot of it. There was a root to that Oklahoma was always a nice place, always looked forward to coming in the summer, and there was a tremendous freedom about it because we weren't under the parent thumb. Why are you going? How long are you going to be there? When will you be back? Or you just can't go.
Hmm.
No, it's a school night. You can't go. no, you've got, no, grandma really wants to be the bad guy. And so there was a happy connotation and a freedom to it, I think, of coming back here, that there's just always a liberty you didn't have anywhere else growing up.
Right.
Anyway, so back to White Dog. So I realized it needed to be commercial. And it's shortly after I arrived in Oklahoma, there was a brand new friend of mine who was touring the U.S. She's a Harvard. She's a Cambridge graduate and had worked on Bond Street in London for years and years and years, decided she needed a change. And one of the few people I'd met when I got to Oklahoma was a really nice Cheyenne woman over in Cheyenne, Oklahoma. Well, Jackie was traveling through and it had a dream about Cheyenne. So she ends up deciding to tour through there. And as she's just kind of traveling the country and meets this mutual friend, my new mutual friend, who then calls me and says, you've got to meet my wonderful new British friend. And so I went over to Cheyenne. We just hit it off. Well, she was in other fields, but her background is, and her passion has always been food. Some of her closest friends are very successful cordon bleu chefs running resorts or running successful catering businesses in London, and she was always around that. So all of a sudden, it's like, I've got this old building that needs to be commercial and probably should be a restaurant, and I've got this new friend who's virtually a cordon bleu chef by experience, who has now fallen in love and is engaged to this Cheyenne fellow. So she's not actually going anywhere after all. So started suckering her into this whole fiesta and using whatever pressure I could come up with. And so we've been together on White Dog since we opened. And so, yes, you come for the view and you come for the atmosphere, but then the food is superb, and that's all Jackie, and it always has been. She was originally, when she got here, the poor woman, she was Jacqueline Davies, a Cambridge graduate. Now she, of course, is Jackie Davies Thunderbolt. And she actually, I stood in as her family member when they had the Cheyenne ceremony. Her husband was in the military and had shipped off to Iraq. And when he got back, they were getting married. And I stood in for their, as her family member for her Cheyenne ceremony, which was lovely.
Awesome.
With the tribal shaman and the exchange of gifts and blankets and food and things with his family. And they'd set up the teepee for it and did a soldier's cleansing and blessing because he had just got back. And so that was really lovely. And then about 2 weeks later at my farm, then we had the whole civil ceremony out in my orchard around the lily pond. So we've just had a long and to some great degree in-depth friendship all these years. And we both arrived in Oklahoma within weeks of each other in 2000.
What a neat coincidence. I am going to have to give a shout out right now to Jackie. Your food is amazing. It's ridiculously good. We'll come back to the menu in a bit. You're redesigning this golf course on the hill with your trailer outside there. When did you realize that the views from this place were just
breathtaking?
Yeah.
Well, early on, again, it's like, it's a neat place. And I liked it from the fact that what little bit I knew of Clinton, because I arrived knowing absolutely nothing, because people say, how did you end up here? And it's like, kid, it's Mohammed or it's the mountain, and it was easier to move Mohammed. The mountains were here.
Right.
But I knew nothing about Clinton. And early on, I found out Clinton, for years and years and years, had built itself as the hub city. And from the hilltop, you could see the elevators at Corn and Bessie, and on a clear day, you can almost see Cordell and Clinton and Arapahoe and Custer City. And it was just kind of fun. But beyond that, I wasn't really dwelling on what a magnificent sunset or any of this. It was just fun. And my first thought, actually, I even went to El Reno to go to the fort there, because I thought, maybe some of this structure goes back to cavalry days, because it would have been a perfect lookout. You can see for miles and miles and miles in any direction. I never could validate that. If anything, disprove that thought.
You said, you mentioned you kind of did some research to see if it goes back to the cavalry days, but it does have a connection to World War II. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, from what I've heard from people, and there are still people swear out there, some floating around somewhere. There you will still find postcards and things. During the Second World War, apparently the hill was called Welcome Hill, because people said with the returning soldiers from World War II, they would have shipped in, I suppose, through Oklahoma City. They're coming down what would have still been 66. I-40 didn't exist yet. So when they're coming over that hill is their first glimpse for Clinton soldiers of home. Like I say, some people say it's a cute fantasy, but others swear it was the truth, that at night the street lamps from on that hill spelled welcome.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, if it's a true story, it's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, that's a hell of a selling point.
Well, and I ended up naming it White Dog. When I had the little farm, it already had the old signpost, and I thought, I've got to put a sign on the farm. And it was just like a little toy farm, the little stone house and thing. And I had the White Dog, who I'd got just kind of found. I'd called a vet and said, where's the pound? They said, don't go to the pound. We've got a little dog that needs to be adopted. And it turned out to be the White Dog, who never was named anything else because nothing ever seemed to fit. I thought, well, I'll just call it White Dog Farm because we're across from the Indian Hospital. And every morning from the rehab center, you'd have all these people doing their laps of the Indian Hospital grounds. And he would go out and walk down the road with them. I thought, you know, actually here, White Dog is a perfectly proper name. He's out there walking with the Thunderbolts or the White Skunks or the who, you know, so I'm just going to call it White Dog Farm because he's my little buddy. He's like my lucky talisman. Mm-hmm. And so I called it White Dog Farm. And actually within 2 or 3 months, I could get mail delivered to White Dog Farm in Clinton. That it just sort of caught on. Even more so, it cemented the fact that he was my little lucky charm. And which is why I just took the name with me to the hilltop.
That's
and
awesome.
Called it White Dog Hill. And then also, come to find out later, one man stopped by. People would just stop out of curiosity. This man stopped, and he brought me a whole printed out legend. I believe it's Choctaw, but it's actually framed on the wall up there. And it's about the legend of the White Dog. I could be getting the tribe wrong, but I think it's Choctaw. That was their name for the Milky Way. They called it like the Trail of the White Dog. And then Jackie and her husband, who's very interested in genealogy, Jackie the chef, as he was doing research just a few years ago into his family, he found that he was always interested in law enforcement, and he was an MP in the military and things. He found that his grandfather had also been in the tribal police. And so it's like, well, this is almost genetic. His grandfather was also very interested in law enforcement. Well, that area where White Dog is was part of his grandfather's territory to cover. In researching, he comes to find out that his grandfather's tribal buddy in law enforcement, his name was White Dog.
Wow, that is a weird series of synchronicities. I'm super impressed.
Well, it's sort of like with what I learned years ago in metaphysics, where there aren't really coincidences. There are patterns and things, and whether you acknowledge them or not, but all these things happen for a reason. All these things just kept, from the first glove box telling me I need to move to Oklahoma, they just seemed to keep happening and validating what we were doing.
Nelson, I have a question about the decor, kind of the feel of your restaurant. I know that the building played a big role in the design that you've got. You've got a real rustic charm, but it really seems like you've got, I don't even know how to put it, like standing outside, it almost looks like you're in a, outside of a French pavilion, not a pavilion, like an old
chateau,
French chateau
yeah.
or something. And then other places, it looks like it has a different origin. How did you come up with the design aesthetic for White Dog Hill?
My point to people, when somebody comes up and says, oh, we're getting ready to build a house and so, could we photograph because there are features of this or atmosphere of it we'd like to duplicate? My first thought, having a background in design and architecture, which was my original degree, or only degree, that sounds like I have several, I don't, you're not going to get it because this has an agent of patina to it. You can build new, you could hire the best stonemasons, whatever. You're never going to actually match this kind of atmosphere because this has had 100 years to evolve. And overall, I think kind of happily evolve, although there's some question as to whether the property is haunted. But I got the tribal shaman out at one point, and he blessed it and cleansed it, and that seemed to take care of it. But also, my point to people as well, it's like, honey, you're going to start out with some blueprints and a general contractor and a budget, and you're going to say, this is really lovely and I need it by Thursday. That's also going to be strikes against you when you're starting with an old building like right. this. I said it was to my advantage that I had a lot more time than I had money. Mm-hmm. And so that there was time to let things, there wasn't any crunch of time. I mean, at some point I was going to have to get it open, but it took years to get financing because this old building scared the bankers to death. But you could feel your way along. So it's, I should change this. Well, maybe I shouldn't. This just, something about this feels right. I think it's going to be horribly inconvenient, but it just seemed like it's supposed to stay here. And that's where if you've got the time instead of the deadline, I think that makes a difference. When we first opened, there was hardly anything on the walls. It was just, it was like, we just have to get open because then I got financing and that was gone. It's like, I just got to start turning some bucks here.
Right.
But then somebody shows up the very first week. I've got a beautiful picture in there, which Jackie kind of identified. And she said, I have a similar sort of thing back home in storage in London of the a round, intricately carved frame with a beautiful, like, black and white portrait of a dog. Looks like a bird dog or hunting dog. Some people came the very first week we were open. They said, oh, back at our home in Cordell, we've got this picture shoved under the bed of a dog, but it looks like it belongs here. We'll come back to dinner next week and bring you that picture and you can hang it up. And I'm thinking, oh, Lord, it's going to be one of those prints with some boxers in suits playing
right.
cards. And it's like they're cute, but it's not really what I picture here. And they show up the next week with this gorgeous thing. Jackie looks at it and she said, this would have been true Victorian. And it would have been a commissioned portrait of somebody's champion dog. And she said, no, it's absolutely pure Victorian. Well, it hung there for years. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, they come, no matter where they live now, the couple from Cordell, they come every year for Valentine's. And because we do a big Valentine's spread, fixed menu. About 3 years ago, they just said, okay, we've been talking it over. The picture is now officially yours.
Oh, wow.
So that was very sweet. Because all the previous years it was on loan. But that's a lot of the stuff is like that. People just show up and it's like, I think my picture ought to hang up here.
Uh-huh.
Well, and so much of it evolved. And I think that's where so much of the atmosphere comes from. That even while I was building, people I didn't know would call up or come by and go, I saw this neat old door. And it's just such a neat door. And I don't really have any use for it. But I'll bet you could use it up here.
There's something, and again, I haven't been, I'm just going on what I've been told, what and listening to you describe it in the pictures that I've seen, there is something, it's not just charming, but it draws you in.
But I think that's because there's so many people invested in it.
Yes, and it's not, there's an emotional connection. There's something, I don't know, the aesthetic just, it's...
Over the years, there's a lot of people, there are still people left. Not necessarily that golfed up here up to early 50s when the place closed, but there are still people left who have happy memories of it when their prom and cotillion was here in the 30s or 40s.
Oh, wow.
Or
awesome.
Maybe it wasn't a real happy experience, but it gave them an interesting story they've been cashing in on the rest of their lives mm-hmm. about getting, you know, the robbers coming up when it was a country club and coming up, standing everybody up against the wall and having them, you know, empty their pockets and mm-hmm. take off their jewelry. And now it's not scary. It's just a really interesting story they've traded on since the 40s or 50s.
So Nelson, go ahead. You know, you mentioned stories and you talked about what a history it's had. You mentioned having, and you kind of, you didn't, I don't think you skimmed over it, but a previous haunting there? Is that?
In the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember now because it's one of those things you don't really dwell on.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fellow here in town from a relatively prominent family. I guess one morning, you pick up bits and pieces, because it was quite a few years ago. He told his wife, you know, the kids are still asleep. Let me take you to breakfast. He brought her up to that immediate area, not into the building, but in that immediate area, and stabbed her like 27 times with an ice pick.
Goodness.
And then got in the car, drove back to town, drove to the police station, and turned himself in.
Wow.
And so we always just said, because there clearly was some presence up there, not malignant, But it just, somebody says, I just heard a door open, or I just heard furniture moving, but I'm the only person on that floor, or the only person in the building. Or I was up here working on something, and somebody came up behind me right to my ear and whispered my name in my ear.
Wow.
And I was running into some of that. It was like I was doing something, trying to get a well in, and I just went on 6 months. I just can't get the well working. It was just one thing after another. To the point, it was similar to what I ran into. I had had a couple different properties in an old inner-city neighborhood in Miami when I lived there. And all of us there, sooner or later, whether you want to believe in it or not, all of us ended up having to somewhat cleanse our properties.
Hmm.
Because there's just something going on. So here, after a point when it's like, some, as fast as I can do something, it's getting undone. And it's like, this isn't just me. So I called who was then wonderful, sweetest old man, Moses Starr, was the tribal shaman. And I called Moses and I said, kiddo, I need you to come sort of cleanse and bless this property. Because there's just too much stuff going on, and I'm not making any headway. And he came up, and again, not knowing the traditions, he's very gun-shy of, you don't pay him, you don't, there's a lot of things you don't do because he is the shaman. We went through a whole ceremony of my thanking him, and he comes up with his abalone shell and his sage and his peyote fan. And he said, well, what do you want me to cleanse or bless? And it's like, Moses, darling, pick anything. Me, the dog, the building, the property. I mean, just have at it.
Right.
So he was up there quite a while chanting and burning the sage or the sweet grass or whatever. You know, 2 days later, I had the well working.
That's great. So sometimes those things, it's an energy.
Well, I've always felt like that's probably why I've never really experienced whatever ghost was up there. Because I've always felt like I've had Moses' protection. But other people have experience where they've heard something move, or I just emptied the trash can, put the trash can back down. When I came to put another liner in the trash can, it's now on the other side of the room. I've never really experienced that, but I think it goes back to Moses and his cleansing and his blessing of us.
We've actually undertaken a similar activity in the past. But as far as the ghost goes, the haunting, there are a lot of paranormal groups in Oklahoma. Have they reached out to you as far as...
We had, several years ago, Oklahoma Tourism had done a whole long interview. We happened to sort of blow past that. And then, see, I don't have television. I don't really listen to radio and stuff much. But I don't have cable and things. So I miss most, and I don't have a cell phone. I'm the boy in the bubble. Although I'm not really a boy, but it's an old boy. But it so I miss so much of that. But then all of a sudden I find out after they'd done this interview months ago, people started showing up or calling going, oh, that was so neat. And I said, what? Oh, you were on the thingy with Oklahoma Tourism. And they said, when did it run? Oh, you were part of the haunted show at Halloween. Excuse me? So the next year when they went to rerun the program, the girl calls and she said, we do want to run the program. Is that okay? And I went, oh, yeah, no, it's fine. It's actually good for business. She said, well, I thought you were kind of a little bent last year. And I said, I was left fielded off this thing. I thought we're having a human interest story or historical Oklahoma, and I'm on the haunted show, and you're superimposing ghosts in my dining room? So I was a little caught off guard. But you want to run it? Because people did start showing up, and were fascinated with the whole thing. But that kind of died back after a while. But and really, I think it's been a few years since anybody's felt like they had some experience.
Okay, so Nelson, I have to ask, because your place scared the bejesus out of me when I went downstairs to use the restroom. And you whose idea was it to put that tiny little troll by the toilet?
Oh, it's a monkey.
That looks like a troll.
No, we just thought it was cute. We just thought it was cute, but it also, especially like with children and things, no offense, with children, it kind of keeps them in line and keeps them more orderly because they do find it spooky. But otherwise, he said there was his little handout, like a little valet monkey in his little vest. And so he's usually sitting there holding your roll of toilet paper. But he's just kind of fun. Actually, we had an occasion very early on. We had just opened. And I had this one woman waiting up there, and she was no bigger than a minute. The woman weighed 85 pounds. She comes tearing up, find me in the building. We had a big wedding, and she said, somebody just stole the monkey. Honey, if she had had a gun, she would have shot him. And it was a couple of kids had come to the wedding, high school, college age, and one had tried to sneak the monkey out. And my nephew happened to be helping out that night. The three of us went charging out, found the kid in the parking lot. My nephew invited him to go ahead and leave. He did surrender the monkey.
That monkey looks like a troll. I'm sorry, it's got fangs or something.
It's kind of a weird looking, if not to say creepy looking monkey. But actually, it was one of those things. My sisters used to go to a bunch of auctions in North Texas that had a lot of Indonesian stuff, and you could come up with some really bizarre and freakish things. And they actually got it at the auction and said, "You need this for White Dog." It wasn't something I actually picked out. They got it for me.
Well, it does fit with the stacked stone on the bottom level, and it's almost cave-like, and you come around there, and you're not really expecting it. It just kind of jumps out at you. So
yeah. Well, actually, if you look, or when you do come, you'll see that having the abstract and having the dates of when the first guys were forming a country club association, I started on really cold days when I couldn't be working up there. I would go to the library and go through the microfilms, starting from the dates on the abstract. And it wasn't until late that summer, and I found an old newspaper article that stated the size of the building, the quality of, they thought they'd hit an artesian well at like 78 feet. Now you drill 300 or 400 feet. They had thought they had an artesian well. They built the building this big. This was the this. That was the that. They were going to put in horseshoe pits with nickel-plated horseshoes, and they were going to convert a local pond into a country club swimming pool. It was great. And the downstairs was the quarry. So you'll see up 4 or 5 feet, that's actually like living rock. Then you've got masonry on top of it. So the downstairs would actually have been buried down, that would have been buried into the hilltop, because the downstairs was the quarry that the whole building was built from. And if you look at the bricks, you'll see a lot of the bricks are stamped Acme Brick, and the old Acme Brick plant is owned by the city, is now like an event center and a sports facility on the west side of town, but that was the old Acme Brick plant. So it was a local done project. It really is like living rock up across the east wall, down the south wall, and through the bathrooms on the north end, is all living rock up so high.
So Nelson, you know, we talked this design aesthetics. You know, I was telling him there's some angles that look like you're in Arizona. There's some angles that feel like you're in Colorado. So menu wise, as far as the menu goes, I mean,
the main attraction,
you have an English cordon bleu chef. Smack dab in Western Oklahoma. I mean, everything about White Dog Hill, the more I dig in, I have not literally dug in yet. I will. But the more we dig
Seems
into the history.
Unlikely.
You talk about an amalgamation of the universe just coming together for this perfect thing. The menu. How do you tell me the menu design?
Okay. We started out initially. Like, when I knew that the money's running out and we have to get open, I said, we can do a burger and a steak. And again, people are going, you can't open with just a burger and a steak. And I said, well, we're going to have to open because I have to get the damn doors open. And so we started, and trading on the fact that there was such a high curiosity factor, it's going to draw some people as long as the stuff tastes okay. In the beginning, I thought it was sort of my responsibility to have more input on menu or sides, or if we did a weekly special. Quickly, I learned this is part of what makes it interesting for Jackie. She's not just standing there all day, every day, baking baked potatoes.
Right.
But she is researching and going, we ought to try this. We ought to try that. So she's the one coming up with, I have this wonderful recipe for parsnips. I'm going, who in the hell eats parsnips? But then customers come up and go, oh my God, nobody ever serves parsnips, and we love parsnips. Okay?
Yeah.
So I just learned pretty quickly that I need to back off and let Jackie express herself. Mm-hmm. And having grown up in the environment she did, in London where, you know, if you had a wild craving for raw calamari in the middle of the night, there's some place in London you could go summer, winter, spring, or fall.
Right.
So, you know, she came from culinarily an unlimited repertoire and exposure, which also for her has been over the years horribly frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I decided I wanted to do cheese boards for appetizers, honest to Pete, in the beginning, when I'm calling the food suppliers and going, what could I get for cheeses to put together an interesting variety? In return, you pretty much get, well, we got cheddar, and we got smoked cheddar, and we got sliced cheddar.
Oh, my God.
And so a lot has changed. I mean, in the years we've been open, we've seen a tremendous change. But I remember at one point I wanted to do Kalamata olives, I'd called one rep and I said, do you have Kalamatas? And he go, oh, you could just tell. The phone went dead. And I said, do you have your computer in front of you? Yeah. Well, punch this in, K-A-L-A-M-A-T-A.
Mm-hmm.
And after a minute you get, oh, my God, we do. I never knew what a Kalamata onion was.
Mm.
Well, honey, you still don't.
You still don't, right?
And so it's been interesting. And they have now learned that Kalamata also makes olives. So, you know, everybody's learned. But it's been amazing to see how the scope of things has changed.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we ran into in the beginning, too, times I felt almost threatened because it seemed like the type of restaurant that should have a decent bar.
Right.
And serve some nice wines. I'm not a drinker. But again, Jackie's coming from London. She's been around quality. She's traveled a lot through Europe. She knows a good wine to put these things together. But there were times I almost felt threatened with people going, you're going to have liquor? Well, that'll be interesting to see how that goes over. You know, within a couple, 3 years, a lot of the places around here started getting liquor licenses.
Hmm.
And it's okay. And people come up and now it is part of their dining experience and no harm done.
That's awesome.
So that's been kind of nice, but it certainly wasn't the objective. It just seemed like it ought to be part of the atmosphere.
So, Nelson, I'm looking at the days of operation, the hours of operation. Perfect. I mean, it's dinner. Perfect. Reservations are preferred. The Wednesday through Saturday, that's an interesting schedule. Tell me about that. Why Wednesday through Saturday?
Well, there was so much discussion in the beginning between Jackie and I particularly, and then with family members, like even doing reservations. My sister, who's been married into a ranching family over at Hydro for 50-some years, was going, if you push reservations, you're going to put yourself out of business because Western Oklahoma ain't going to make them. And still to this day, someone will call up periodically and ask if they need an appointment for dinner. And go, no, you need an appointment for the dentist. You need an appointment to get your nails done. But it was a slow thing. But fortunately, we were popular enough early enough that people learned, well, I don't make them, but if I ever want to eat there, I'm going to have to.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it sort of changed things without ever intending to. It's just coming in naively from the cities going, but that's what people do in the cities,
mm-hmm.
not realizing there was almost a taboo about it here. People learned, and it works out. Some of our first and steadiest customers were like middle-aged and professional women.
Really?
They're going, this is so nice. We can come. We have our table. We're not going to stand around outside waiting for our turn, that we know we have a reservation at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. And that was some of our earliest, most loyal customers were like professional or groups of women. They were delighted that they could make a reservation, knew they had a table waiting when they got here.
So
it's been really kind of interesting to just sit back and watch.
Absolutely. So as far as the menu goes, I'm not going to make you go through your menu because it's constantly evolving. It's constantly changing. You do have some staples, though, steak, shrimp, pork chops. But as far as your sides and your desserts go,
I have a local lady who does the desserts, and she does usually about 3, maybe 4 different desserts. They usually change about every week.
Mm-hmm.
We try to have something chocolate and then just something different. most of it real kind of home cooking stuff, not anything really fancy or elaborate, like, you know, rhubarb pie or lemon pecan pies or some sort of cheesecakes or, you know, but all nice homemade things.
But that's my point,
though. And then the menu itself.
That's my point, though, Nelson. You flew past those. Do you know how many places you can get rhubarb pie in the state of Oklahoma?
Grandma's.
I think it's two. It's your place and Grandma's. You guys have some really unique offerings. It kind of just goes in line with what's available right now, that type of thing.
Well, that's the other thing is the seasonal things. And I know there's so much emphasis on that. We don't really push it. I've learned to a degree with certain produce and things. There's a couple of factors on it. One, if you're trying to serve watermelon and you're serving them in the summer, one, they're more readily available, and the price is the best. But one of the nice things about when the price is the best, it also means, which to me is as important, is the quality is the best. If I call this week and this vegetable is X dollars, and I call next week and that product is X dollars doubled, I don't want to order it next week. Yes, it's twice as expensive, but it also means it's between seasons and the quality is going to be crap.
Right. Yeah, you can't get a good cherry. Yeah. No, you can't get...
Yeah, when the price is the lowest, you know that the quality is the best.
Yeah.
Because you're in the middle of that season. As far as pushing it, like you see so much in food magazines and things that farm to table and all this, we don't really push it. We tried it a little bit in the beginning. That wouldn't it be nice to do, or somebody that does a certain amount of farming or, you know, is active in a local farmer's market is coming and going, what do you want to see? And here's all these seed lists, and pick some and I'll raise them for you. And go, well, that would be just grand. Well, then we have one of those off years and they don't get one bloody tomato.
Right. So, Nelson.
It was a good idea, but it didn't work out.
So.
Yes, sir.
We're in, obviously. We're finally starting to ramp back up, and they're kind of releasing the valve and letting people eat within a reasonable distance of each other. Has that impacted with having reservations? Have you been able to kind of control how many reservations? How has the social distancing and the COVID-19 affected White Dog Hill from then to now?
Not a great deal. I mean, we did shut down and do takeout only for about 2 months. And then everybody tries to be careful in masks and gloves and things. But then it just got to a point where it seems like, for one, we've had very, very few cases in this whole area.
Right.
Although we have to watch because we have to be aware of the fact that we have quite a large drawing radius.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not just serving Custer County, say. But part of the thing was we also had a lot of people out here that's going, there's a flu?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, honey, there is a flu going on. Well, I thought it was over. So there's a good part of people who don't realize anything has happened in the last few months.
Right.
They just go through a different door at the grocery store. But that's about all they noticed, I think. We would have somebody call up and they want to book for a 12 top, which was strange because the minute we reopened, it seemed like it was only big groups of people who wanted to book. That seemed very odd and a little uncomfortable. But they'd call and go, you know, just so we're in compliance or at least recommendation, could we split you to a couple of tables? Well, they're fine with that. Honey, whatever makes you comfortable, you push it two or three. Okay, we'll do that. And then 30 minutes later, somebody else calls. They want to book for a 12 top and go, would be better, would be more in compliance if we split you to a couple tables. And the response is, well, what the hell is the point of having a party if we're split up all over the place? Okay. Well, so it's been kind of a tightrope.
Right.
For the people who acknowledge the people who are guarded about it and the people who are either ignorant of it or indifferent to it.
Sure.
But fortunately for us, and this is one of the points I brought into it, not having a restaurant background. And I thought, because I traveled so much, especially out of Florida, and traveled internationally so much, I thought, okay, Jackie's bringing in a marvelous culinary skill. And I've got a 19-year-old waiter who knows more about restauranteuring than any of us. So what am I actually bringing into it other than I own the building? And I thought, what I am bringing into it is I've traveled so much and I've eaten in so many different environments.
Right.
What do I remember about them? Or what are my favorite restaurants and why? And I realize My favorite restaurant in the world is a Thai restaurant down in St. Martin in the French West Indies, where I used to go a lot on business. The food was wonderful, but beyond that, everybody was so nice. Mm-hmm. I loved going there. I liked the music. I liked the atmosphere. This place is rustic. They didn't even have windows. This is in like a hurricane-proof cement building out of Marigot on the French side of St. Martin. And it wasn't cheap, but it was real good food. Everybody was nice. If I was interested in, this taste is so good, how is it done? Oh, great, go back, see Chani in the kitchen. He'll show you how to fix it. Okay, I mean, there was just that atmosphere to it. I never had to call a cab to get back to my hotel because somebody there is like, well, that waitress isn't busy. She'll run you to the hotel. I just love this place. And the same sort of thing I found on a houseboat in Cairo on the Nile, that same sort of hospitality, conviviality, that's what I'm bringing into the whole equation is this sort of thing, plus the fact that, you know, I own the place outright, so I don't have a lot of overhead. So I don't have to put tables 3 inches apart, because that's one thing I particularly hate about a restaurant I go into. And the higher dollar it is, the more it will piss me off that I'm paying more and more money. Yeah. And I've got strangers in each pocket.
I will say that it seems like every table in the place is really intimate. You feel like you're almost there by yourselves, which is...
Yeah, you've got breathing room. So for us with COVID, it wasn't a difficult thing. We moved out of each dining room like one or two tables, and we could spread everybody out if they want to sit at 12. But it's still the I don't know how people rationalize. I know a couple of weeks ago, some people kept calling going, we have somebody in our party that is very, very physically or health-wise very compromised, and somebody else who is handicapped. So we need an isolated place. We need to be downstairs where it's handicap accessible, but we've got to be very, very careful because their health is so fragile. So we just need a private place for the 16 of us.
A private place for the, that's awesome. Nelson, if somebody wants to make special arrangements or they have questions, what's the best way for people to reach out to you over there at White Dog Hill?
The best thing is just call to our numbers. I've got two different phones up there, but with the main number, there's machines on, and we get back to you within a few hours, even on the days we're closed. And we are actually in the process of creating a Facebook page. I think, no, is it Facebook? No, website. I'm ignorant on all this stuff. No, he's working on, it's a webmaster, web whatever. And he's working up a website, but we do have a Facebook page so people can kind of do an overview. They can see that week's menu. They can leave messages, preferably praise. And so that works. And that's overseen really by the chef, by Jackie.
Yeah, I know. I talked to her via Facebook a couple of weeks back. She's super sweet and super helpful. We'll post the link for your Facebook page in the show notes and on our social media. And just for everybody's knowledge, your direct line is 580-323-6922, and that'll get you right to White Dog Hill in Clinton.
Yes.
Nelson, yes. You know, we want to, first of all, thank you so much. You weren't a dud. You thought you were going to be a dud. You did great. There's going to be a lot of editing, mainly because of me. But thank you so much for taking the time out to be on here. You're doing just a hell of a job out there. Everything I've heard, everything I've read, they have nothing but just kind words and positive. And it's such a positive environment. And thanks for sharing it. Thanks for bringing it to us. I mean, you guys are just doing a bang-up job.
Great.
Yeah.
Who knew? Well, it's like we lost the White Dog a few years ago, but he was like my lucky charm. And it just seemed to make everything work. And I really do a lot of credit to him. He was just, I don't know, he was an inspiration. He was a sweet boy. But yeah, it's just a strange thing. It's like the universe conspired to make everything work, and we've just been the recipient of it, and we're very lucky.
Listen, Nelson, who'd have thought a chef from London, a visitor from Miami, not Miami, could come to Clinton, yes, Oklahoma, and turn something? I mean, you turned the key and magic happened. So
thank you very much.
Great job.
We really appreciate you coming on the show, Nelson.
No, it's been nice, and I've been able to sit in the yard, listen to the birds. Beans is having a nap, and we're just having a nice evening. So thank you guys very much.
What people don't know, we argued back and forth. I was supposed to go to White Dog Hill when I went to the water zoo. I didn't do it.
I promise you in 30 minutes, you're going to say, I never went to White Dog Hill. And I'm going to be like, dude, you went to White Dog Hill. And you're going to have to argue with
you almost have me convinced that I went. I was about to have to phone a friend to verify that I actually went.
I'm sorry. You said you were going. So my expectation is that you went.
When I realized that it wasn't just going to be a date for two, it was going to be a family thing. And I really think it looks like a great place for just a couple's night out.
I would say the young ones won't get the full impact.
Because young ones don't have taste buds, man.
But not only that, but have you ever tried to get a kid to look at a sunset? They're like,
yes, you have 12 kids and I've watched you fight 12 kids.
Yeah, that's nice, Dad. And then their head's right back in their phone.
When tablets were just coming out and we drove to the Grand Canyon with probably arguably the best view you could have between here and there, does Connor remember anything? I'm just saying.
You want to know what he really remembers about the road trip to the Grand Canyon?
The Petrified Forest?
Nope.
What?
The hotels.
That was cool. We did the Motel 6 tour.
We did do the Motel 6 tour. I think it was legit.
It was legit. But the point being, kids don't deserve to eat good. I think that's the point that I'm making. Kids don't deserve it.
I don't know that that's the case.
I attempt to feed a 12-year-old some of the best food I've ever cooked in my life. Imagine sitting down to a Yelp review every single night. If it doesn't have pepperoni on it, it's not made of a chicken strip, they don't like it.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. But something that they did like,
what?
And we will have a show upcoming about it, is the water zoo in Clinton, Oklahoma.
Dude, it's fun. I had fun.
The Route 66 Museum in Clinton, which we will have a...
By the way, I don't know if you know this, hidden in the archives of the early stages of Only an OK, I have an interview with the museum director of the Clinton Route 66 Museum. Did you know that?
I did know that, and I'm pretty sure we don't have that recording.
Wow, okay.
We will have that show coming up soon. Yeah. We've got the Clinton Water Zoo coming up really soon. We've got Decentio's out of Marlow coming up soon.
Yes. As things are slowly starting to open up, our playbook is broadening. We're not talking about everything being covered in COVID.
Super excited. Yeah. I'm super excited about stuff being open and being able to go places. But I really want to know how our listeners feel. Is this something you're excited about? Or would you prefer to go back to the Stone Ages where we don't have awesome places like White Dog Hill to go eat at, or you've got to take it curbside?
Can I voice one random complaint about this whole situation?
Sure.
So I've started wearing masks as a requirement at work. If you're not a mask wearer, the mask wearers look at you like you're crazy. If you are wearing a mask, the non-mask wearers look at you like crazy. I'm over it.
Win for losing.
You cannot win for losing. Maybe I'm going to have to die of COVID to prove myself a point and to prove to everyone else.
Mask or no mask, we do need some more reviews on iTunes. So if you have the ability to go give us a review over at iTunes, we would really appreciate it.
You know what sounds like mask? Moss. We need moss reviews, not mask reviews. Moss reviews on iTunes.
Well, this has been the Only an OK Show. I am Harley.
I'm Brett.
We're out of here.
Peace. I can't help that you pack your bags and go off on a vision quest every 2 weeks. I can't help that.
So just pretend I'm a trained monkey on a leash.
Perfect. That's the kind we need. You have good energy, so already we're swinging for the fence, and we know it. So I wish I may. I wish I might. I wish I had somewhere to camp tonight. Okay, I don't. I camp. I fall asleep. I pass out.
of all the things I've lost in life, I miss my mind the most.
3, 2, 1.
Oh, yeah. You tell me not to rush in, and I don't know how not to. Okay. Only fools rush in, right? 3, 2, 1.